In 1980, when he was 22 and just a couple of months out of college, Bill Evans was invited by Miles Davis to join his group. Since then, he's played with a wide array of jazz musicians, including Herbie Hancock, John McLaughlin, Michael Franks, but also Willie Nelson, Bela Fleck, Bruce Hornsby, Mick Jagger, the Allman Brothers, and Modesky Martin and Wood. We're listening to Dragonfly, the title track of his 19th CD that he's recorded under his own name. And beginning tonight and running through Saturday, you can see him perform live at the Blue Note on West 4th Street. Gives me great pleasure to welcome Bill Evans to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
So did Miles Davis have a thing about musicians named Evans? There's Gil Evans and then two Bill Evanses?
It's kind of funny because he actually was interviewed with me in his presence at that time, and he said, must be something about those Evanses. I can't seem to get away from those guys.
It's even ill Evanses.
Exactly.
Although you grew up in a suburb of Chicago, didn't you go to William Patterson University in New Jersey?
I did.
Were you a music major there?
I was a music major, but my whole thing was I wanted to be around New York. I just wanted to be around great jazz musicians. So whatever got me to the East Coast was where I was going to be happiest.
But it didn't hurt that Dave Liebman was teaching there. He had was a pretty great tenor player in his own right, and he had been a member of an earlier Miles Davis group.
Yeah, I'd studied with Dave a little bit. We get together and play, and I was so hungry to get together with all the great saxophone players and just learn something from all of them. So, you know.
Well, there was a loft scene in New York at the time, so that could be an education. Has that been pretty much lost today?
You know, I don't know. We had a loft that was about as crazy and funky as you could ever imagine, with musicians sleeping on the floor everywhere, rats in the back. But we played all day long. And this is like early 80s, right, when I joined Miles' band, as a matter of fact. And, yeah, there was a certain thing that was really happening back then that I think that doesn't really happen now that I know of, you know.
Well, I've spoken to a number of musicians who've said the only way you really learn to play well is to play with good musicians.
I think that's true. I think that's the same, you know, for anything. You know, you want to be able to learn from the people that you're playing with. You don't want to be the best person in the band. You want to be with other people that can take you to other places and push you to other dimensions. You know, that's always been important to me.
Now, the band you joined has been called Miles Davis's comeback group. That was the early to mid-1980s, because he had gone into what some people considered a decline for a while.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, you got to figure, I was 21 years old just coming out of college, and I'm hanging out with Miles Davis. You know, it's like, and we became really good friends. It was the weirdest grouping, but it worked because I was sort of his eyes to the world. You know, he'd been in sort of the seclusion place for a while, and all of a sudden, here's this kid that's like, hey, Miles, what's going on? Let's play, you know, and so it worked.
Well, he also had a reputation for teaching young musicians who joined his group. He did that with John Coltrane, later with Herbie Hancock and Tony Williams. But I assume that it also moved in the other direction, because this is around the time that Miles started incorporating some of the things he was hearing from rock musicians. I guess the younger, I don't know whether he would have heard Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time without somebody saying, hey, why don't you listen to this?
You know what? He listened to the radio all the time. And that's one of the inspirational things that I got from him, listening to all kinds of music and be inspired by it. It's always been one of my things, always been one of his things. And we'd always listen to the radio together and talk about rock music and pop music.
Well, when did you start mixing genres in your own music?
You know what? It started in the early 80s. I mean, I always wanted to incorporate other kinds of music. And it wasn't a conscious thought, like, I think it'd be cool to do this, this, this. I just hear different instruments and think, that would be so inspirational to play with. Why don't I try with this kind of percussion or a banjo or a mandolin? Or it's just, it evolved. It always evolved that way, just as far as being inspirational to me.
So you have one CD, Sourgrass, which was nominated for a Grammy, which was called Bluegrass Jazz Fusion. But on other CDs, you've included rock, hip-hop, jam, fusion, reggae, Brazilian, slamming funk. Is that a reaction to your tastes? Or is it also a concern that you have to reach a younger audience?
It has nothing to do with reaching a younger audience. It's just, you know what it is? It's like, I don't like to put a straitjacket on. You know, if so many different kind of genres and categories, everybody wants to stay in the category, and it's a safe place to be. For me, I just want to play music. I love vocals. I love different kinds of rock music, pop music, any kind of music. And over the years, it's just inspirational to me to see what happens when you add things on to your music and create something new.
Well, I've spoken to musicians, in fact, a classical musician who said that he grew up listening to classical music and the Beach Boys, in his case, because he was growing up in California. And I'd imagine that it's hard for any musician who grew up in the rock and roll era, no matter how much of a jazz purist he wants to be, to ignore what he or she was listening to in the teen years.
Sure. And you know what? When I was a teenager, it was purely jazz. I mean, it really was.
Yeah, but your father was a classical musician, and you began as a classical musician, didn't you?
I did, but I only listened to jazz when I started actually really listening to music. Big band music was the beginning when I was 10, 11, 12, and then I just wanted to play jazz. And when I started getting into rock and roll music when I was in my later teens, I was discovering bands for myself that friends had been listening to for years. I'm like, hey, have you ever heard of The Who? It's fantastic. And they're saying, where have you been? But I think jazz music, you have to saturate yourself with it in order to get it to a certain level. It's nothing you can take lightly if you want to be good.
Well, isn't improvisation the most difficult part of switching from classical music to jazz?
Absolutely. I mean, classical music is what's written down. You're trying to play the music, and jazz is you're playing what you feel. And for me, I love playing what I feel. You know, I've been fortunate to make a living and a hobby out of playing what I feel. You know, it's a blessed thing to be able to do. It really is.
Well, you grew up at a time when almost every young saxophone player tried to sound like John Coltrane, mm-hmm. but you've developed a distinctive sound. That's been part of the tradition in jazz, hasn't it, that you find a sound that when people hear you, they immediately say, oh, that's Bill Evans, or that's Joe Henderson, or that's mm-hmm. Sonny Rollins, or Stan Getz, or whatever. How do you do that?
You know what? It's not a conscious thing. Eventually, it just evolves that way. You can't say, okay, I'm going to have my own style. You really can't. You just sort of, the more you play your instrument, the more what you feel is just going to come out, because you're never going to be John Coltrane. You're never going to be Joe Henderson. You just play your thing, and hopefully people are going to like it and as well as yourself.
Well, some people are so distinctive, like Ben Webster.
Sure.
Lester Young.
Lucky guys.
You wonder, how the heck did they do that? How did they figure that out?
Well, you know, it's... I have no idea. If they find the potion, you know, and bottle it, I'll buy a few bottles myself.
You mentioned earlier that you like some of the instruments used in Americana, like the banjo, the fiddle, the mandolin, steel guitar. Do you write with those instruments in mind?
I do. The last 8 years or so, I've been writing with those instruments in mind. And I don't look – if you were to ask me, tell me the history of bluegrass music, I couldn't tell you. But a banjo is a very percussive instrument, a very rhythmic instrument, as well as the mandolin, the violin. And for me, it's just so much fun to play with because it's so indicative of jazz also. You know, there's not that – there's so many similarities with bluegrass and jazz. It's – for me, there is no line anymore. It's all just a language, you know.
Well, during the 60s, the jazz musicians were looking to the East. They were looking to Indian music, John Coltrane did, because of the improvisatory aspects there. But rock and roll has been barely improvisatory. And well, bluegrass, I don't know. Did Earl Scruggs improvise a lot?
I think he improvised a lot. My banjo player, Ryan Cavanaugh, has told me that, you know, Earl Scruggs was the first one that started to play with three different picks. Mm-hmm. And so much of that music that I'm learning now is playing off each other. And that's improvisation, you know. So it's their own form of improvisation, but it's improvisation, you know.
My guest is Bill Evans, whose latest – people must get confused, right? Because of the other Bill Evans in jazz.
Yeah, and the
Bill Evans, the tenor and soprano player.
Right.
Who is has a new CD out called Dragonfly.
Right.
And also will be performing at – the Blue Note on West 4th Street tonight through Saturday.
Yep.
With a group that includes a banjo player?
Yeah. I have Ryan Cavanaugh, who's a young master of the instrument, Josh Dion, who's an amazing singer-drummer, Mitch Stein on guitar, Etienne Mbappe. I have this fantastic bass player who's been playing with John McLaughlin from Cameroon, Africa, now living in Paris. And special guest Mike Maneri on vibes. John Medeski is coming in for a couple days on organ, and Randy Brecker on trumpet. And
Well, Randy Brecker's the only one there who might be called a pure jazz musician, although he played with Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah, and we have a band together called Soul Bop, too, which is, you know, all plays all kinds of music. And what we do is we just it's just a charged set of vocals and fun. And it's like it's a bunch of kids that are having a good time on stage creating great music.
So what happens when you're working with different kinds of musicians? I mean, I'm looking over the list, Herbie Hancock, John McLaughlin, Michael Franks, the vocalist, Willie Nelson, Bela Fleck, Mick Jagger, the Allman Brothers, you can't play the same way with all of those people. You have to make major adjustments?
No, because it's still my saxophone. It's still the way I play. It's as if someone were to tell you, would you give a speech for people in Arkansas, California, Chicago, Miami? It's still you. You're still talking. You do your thing. You know, they call me to do what I do, and I reflect off what I'm hearing from them. And it's really interesting because when I was playing solos for Miles or solos for Greg Allman or Warren Haynes or Bela Fleck or these guys, it's the same look in their eyes. They want it. They want you to push the boundaries. They're getting you to take their music somewhere else. So you're both getting something from it, you know. And it just, for me, it's like all music's connected, because that's why I like to play with all these different guys.
So they don't want you just to do a honking tenor player in the grand rock and roll tradition.
No, I do that on my own in the backyard at times, with the birds and the bees. But
you not only have been writing music, but recently you've been writing song lyrics. How did that happen?
Sort of by accident. It's just I'm writing a song. I want to do a song with lyrics. I'll try to sing it myself, whatever, and it just starts coming out. And sometimes, you know, when you're in the strangest moods, the best lyrics come out. You know, it's amazing. It really is when I hear a lyricist or a singer say, I wrote this song when I was really down. I could relate to that because it really does flow out of you at different emotional times.
Well, does it flow out of you with the music together?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the songwriting teams that people always ask, who wrote what first? Was it the melody or the lyric? But I guess when you do both, they can come out at the same moment.
That's a good point. And that's what it does with me because I play piano also. So I'll play piano and I'll try to sing and put my lyrics down. But, my drummer, Josh Dion's a great lyricist and singer, so we'll work together, you know.
You play tenor saxophone but also soprano saxophone. And musicians tell me that soprano is a particularly difficult instrument to play correctly because it's hard to keep it in tune.
I don't understand that. For me, I do understand it, but for me, it just felt like a glove from when I started playing it. And I see so many saxophone players having a problem with that instrument. For me, it has been the most natural thing to play. I don't know why. Miles always used to tell me, he'd say, you know, you hear things in the upper register. He says, because you look like you're very comfortable with that instrument. It's just been something I've been playing since I was 16 years old, and it's never felt uncomfortable for me. I don't know what else to say. You know, it can be hard to play in tune if you're not comfortable with the instrument.
Now, for a while, you played with the Mahavishnu Orchestra and then also with Elements. Do you ever go back?
Sure.
Do you prefer, obviously, being a leader and being able to keep your own band and play your own music?
You know what? When you've been doing your own band, that's what feels the best to you, because that's what you hear in your head at the time and you're playing with the musicians you want to play with. But, you know, as a jazz musician, I also get a buzz from, like, playing with Warren Haynes and Government Mule or the Allman Brothers, and then another night with Willie Nelson, and another night it might sit in with John McLaughlin or whatever. And people say, wow, that's really wild. Well, it's the same saxophone, same guy, and I'm just having fun, you know?
And that guy is Bill Evans, whose latest CD is Dragonfly. And he will be at the Blue Note this week, all through this week until Saturday, the Blue Note on West 4th Street in Greenwich Village. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, I appreciate being here. It's great. You have a great show. Mm-hmm.